Well, you know what it reminds me of? That time we were doing an Instagram Live, and one of the tips that we gave, it was an Instagram Live about, you know, money and relationships, but one of the tips that we gave was to resist the urge to win every money argument.
Yeah.
And somebody DM'd us and was like, yeah, but how do you stop wanting to win? Do you remember what your response was?
I do, and you were like floored and you thought I was being offensive, but I was being honest, right? Because I felt like if you were asking us that question, two people that you've never met, and you are genuinely, you know, befuddled with how you resist this urge, I think I responded back with a question. It was like, why would you want to be in a relationship with someone that's comfortable losing all the time?
Ooh. Welcome to the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success, where we explore life at the intersection of money. I'm Kirsten.
And I'm Julian. Today, we're talking about competition in relationships.
Yes.
I feel like I want to add in a boxer's ding, ding, ding.
Right.
You know, a little bit of fight music. No, I've been looking forward to this conversation because I've been meaning to confront you about this.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, we've got a lot of things to talk about and... You know, surprise, this is an intervention because you are very, very competitive. No, I realize that is probably not the best way to kick off a conversation and certainly not the best way to kick off a podcast, but it's too late now.
Yeah, you done brought the people in. Pick a side, listeners.
Listen.
Who you got?
No, in all seriousness, I think competition within relationships is such an important topic of conversation. And I don't hear enough about it. It's certainly something that we experience on both sides, to be fair. I know for a fact other couples, and even if we're not talking about romantic relationships, I know that it exists and it impacts people's relationships and it has a direct impact on your money. And so we are really excited to talk about it.
Yeah, I'm also intrigued by this topic because I do love to win, and it don't matter what it is. It could be the first person to take off at a green light. It could be, you know, a free ticket on a scratch off. It could be a bingo game that, you know, it's me against me. It don't matter. Like, I love the feeling of winning.
Yeah, yeah, you do. And there's probably like an entire like organization or club or something like that for people like you that, you know, typical sales people that came up in the sales environment.
Champions.
Oh, is that what you're called?
Hall of Fame is where you can find us.
Oh, wow. Wow, that's impressive.
I'm kidding. No. Kind of.
I love it. So let's dive right into it. I want to talk about a few ways, just right off the top, that competition reveals itself in relationships. And I think one of the obvious ones is in celebrations. You're huge. You come from a long line
of
gift givers.
Celebrating sisters.
Yeah. You'll just celebrate the celebration and then compete about who had the best celebration. It is absolutely ridiculous. But I think in relationships, there oftentimes tends to be this competition, right? So like, you know, let's say last year on our anniversary, you know, we took a flight to Europe and we got the suite. And so this year it's like, oh man, you know, we had a good year. It's got to be even bigger. If we went to Europe this year, then this year we've got to go to
space.
You know, the rover has landed and it's like, you know, it is available.
Mars is open
for business. They are actually, they are designing a hotel.
I
saw it. It looked like something straight out of Star Trek. obviously, the views are incredible, but there are tons of jokes about parking.
Ching. Oh, Lord.
Where are you going to park?
Okay, Dad.
I'm just saying. Anyway, when we're talking about competition, I think that's just a big one, right? There's always this idea that you've got to one up and do bigger and better from the previous year. And obviously that has like a huge impact on your spending.
Yeah. I don't necessarily have competition with gift giving. I think the biggest way that competition shows up for me is that I keep score all the time.
Like, do you?
I even put it in my vows. Like, I think I said a line like, you know, I would try not to keep score even when I'm winning. Wink, wink, you know? So it shows up in little ways. Like, you know, I know how many times I've cleared the table versus you. I know how many loads of laundry I've done. Like, it's just a constantly running tab. But where it gets tricky is in the interpersonal front. Like, if I start keeping up with how many times you've had the last word in an argument, then I feel like I deserve the last word. Or if I know how many times you've splurged on something, then I feel like, you know, I just keep adding that up. And it's like, you've splurged $642 worth in the last quarter, so I need to now splurge $712 worth.
You have a problem. this is called, I've got to do some research.
Because I'm good at math?
Well, tell me, how many times have I cleared the table last week, last month? How far back does your spreadsheet go?
I wasn't tracking that last month.
Oh, okay.
Last month I had a different issue I was tracking.
Oh, good. That's good to know. This is, you know, I feel like the listeners are like, you know, just shaking their heads.
I know, and hopefully are. Don't judge me.
They're going to send me some care packages. See, I don't know how he deals with this. This is ridiculous. But it is absolutely true. I wish I could tell you that she is exaggerating. She does this. And kudos to me, because I don't call you out on it enough. I just kind of let it go and sulk in the corner in silence.
Oh, please. You are just as competitive.
I am competitive. I do not keep a score. That's ridiculous. I just kind of like one up in my own way, you know,
yeah.
Quiet brag. You know, I let the numbers, I let the actions do the talking.
Oh,
I don't have to worry about, you know, keeping score. I'm going to write it down. Let people know who won.
All right.
Yeah. Anyway, where do you think that comes from for you?
Like,
I have my thoughts about where I think your sense of competition comes from, but where do you think it comes from?
I mean, I think it's a tool for me. So like, competition is a means to access my highest self or like improve my performance. It is like, while I do track against you because we're around each other so much and I can see you, my favorite person to compete against is myself. Like, I am constantly tracking and monitoring my own progress, and the construct of competition is like what fuels that energy.
Tell me more. I'm your counselor today. Tell me more. Like, do you think your father, because obviously he played a huge role in shaping who you are as a young woman, do you think, like, do you have memories of him, you know, telling you or pushing you to be more competitive or to fight to win or to say, you know, second place or first losers or whatever the saying is?
No. I didn't really get that speech, but he did make it clear, like with extracurriculars, if my heart wasn't in it, like if he could tell I wasn't dedicated and like not really doing it to win or to at least get better, then we weren't going to do it. And so like something like, I remember I wanted to be a cheerleader and he was like, you are not going to enjoy being out there clapping and waving your hands. Like, I want to do it for a social reason. And he was like, no, like that's not the point. Like, it's a competitive sport. It's not, you know. So that there could be something to that. I could have some lingering daddy issues,
which think?
make me competitive. I also grew up with an older brother, so, you know, the testosterone was imbalanced. Well, I guess it was balanced because my mom was there. I don't know.
I listen, I'm going to attribute it to you being a younger sister. I think that probably has a lot to do with it. You had a big brother. Yeah, you were the baby sister. You were probably just always wanting to compete or wanting to do things that he could do. You were also into sports and he was into sports. But you know what I mean? I think that probably has a little bit to do with it as well.
That's a good point, because when you are the baby or the second child, your parents tend to compare your milestones with your older brother or your older sibling. And so, like, I know that I was walking at 10 months. I was reading at 3. I was, you know, I was doing all these things that were, like, ahead of my brother, not because we were in competition, but just because every child develops differently. But the narrative is that, like, you're really good at this. You're a fast learner. You're this, you're that. So, yeah, that's probably something to do that.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, Dr. Ju.
Well, you know, it's what I do, you know.
Since when? You're uncredentialed.
No, I'm one of those quiet, long-term, you know, psychologists. You don't reveal it until it's time to record a podcast, and then I'll let you know that I've been tracking your progress. Congratulations for coming.
So keeping score.
Tracking emotional milestones.
Yeah, okay.
Is what we like to call it.
I can't be the only one that's pro-competition. Like, there's got to be.
No, you're not. You're not. Anyway, so I actually found this article, to your point about pro or being pro competition. It was something that I stumbled upon on people.com, and they were actually recommending competition within relationships. So oftentimes you'll think about it and people immediately imagine that this is a bad thing. You are partners, you're on the same team, you shouldn't be competing. But they were actually saying, well, competition can be a good thing. Now, specifically, they were saying in the event where you're in a relationship and let's just be honest, things get a little boring, you're just going through the motions. They're saying competition can be like a little bit of spice, the little thing that makes things a little more interesting than they would have been, right? So it could be, for example, that you were mentioning that you're keeping score with clearing the table. It could be that this week, you know what, I'm gonna clear all the tables. Like there will not be an unclear table in this house. I'm just gonna clear all of them.
Right? There used to be a meme about that, like what the new hot dad looked like, and it was like dads changing diapers and like burping babies and vacuuming. And it's like, oh yeah, that's hot.
Yeah. On behalf of all men, we're not falling for that. That's a great try. Whoever tried to create that one and tap into the male sense of competition, we're not falling for it. Yeah. But no, it was all about using competition and turning it on its head and saying, hey, if things are kind of dull, there's nothing like a good competition to sort of spice things up. And it could be any number of things. It could be like, I'm going to surprise you for a date and not tell you and we'll see or something like that. But anyway, there was actually something a little bit more interesting in this article. And by the way, the article was entitled, Is Friendly Competition the Key to Relationship Bliss? Bet on it. Anyway, within that article, there was a quote and a reference to a 2018 Japanese study which compared couples in the U.S. and Japan. And what they found was Americans tend to focus on personal achievement and success. And as a result, they have higher levels of passion, which often reveals itself with like this deep competitive desire to favorably compare themselves to like possible romantic rivals, right? So basically what they're saying is Americans are far more individualistic, let's say, versus the Japanese. And as a result, when they get into these relationships, they get super passionate about wanting to compete and basically view everything, everyone, or they have a higher tendency, I should say, to view others as a bit of a threat. And as a result, they try to compete. So it's really, really interesting. To use an example, it could be that I knew before we met that you stayed a guy that drove a really nice car. Mm-hmm. And as a result, as soon as I learned that information, I have a sudden tendency to want to buy a nicer car than that guy had because clearly you like those things.
I like men with nice cars.
You like men with nice cars and, something like that, right? So we're just always, it's very animal planet.
Yeah, I was just about to say that I think we see those same courting rituals and patterns in the animal kingdom all the time. Like there's a reason why male peacocks have like the elaborate feathers and chimpanzees like hit their chest. It's because one, animals don't have Tinder or thumbs, so they can't just like swipe through and find like a partner. They have to find creative ways to signal that they're the best choice, that someone should pick them. And it also makes me think of like this idea that people have a type or that they attract like the same type of person over and over again. Like traditionally, it used to be based on physical attributes. You know, you like people that are tall, dark, and handsome, or you like, blonde or whatever. But I think in today's modern world, it can be more psychological or even material because so many people showcase their relationships online. It's very easy to see how someone was treated in their last relationship because there's like all these internet breadcrumbs and like you can just IG creep and understand like, what you're up against. I'm using air quotes.
Wow. I've never thought about it. I've been off the shelf for a while, so I've not thought about how I might be able to leverage social media and readily available data to shape how I engage with people or women and money and wow.
Yeah, whenever I go out with like my single girlfriends, it's amazing how much they know, about somebody before the first date.
That makes perfect sense.
Before they've even met.
And so, yeah, you might be prone to be disappointed by where he takes you or what he gives you because you have literal evidence that he did something bigger or better compared to someone else.
Or on the negative side, you might doubt, what you're bringing to the table because you can see that he hangs around a lot of pretty women or she, has a very professional job and travels all the time. Like it just starts to kind of like impact your brain a little bit. And you do start you know, kind of intuitively competing.
Oh my goodness. This feels like a really, like we just live in a bad movie.
the simulation.
Yeah, exactly. It's like we're all dating in an episode of Black Mirror.
Well, let's bring it back to money.
So I think, you know, we spoke about competition and relationships and, you know, how it sort of reveals itself in terms of the type of people you pursue and how you pursue them. But I think the most common version of competition, and going back to in relationships, is around income. Right. Mm-hmm. So I know couples, right? So you've got two people, they've been in a relationship, maybe they work in the same field, but they 100% compete in terms of income. They want to know that one person earns significantly more, like they're winning or smarter or better. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's baked right there in the word, in the English word for it, breadwinner. Yeah. Like, there it is.
Yeah, yeah. It's such a fascinating term. We got to do some research on how it came up with bread, because
I know
it could be like cheese winner, cheddar winner,
cheese winner.
Yeah. Anyway, I love that term and I hate that term because there's a gender dynamic to mm-hmm. it as well that's baked into it. And there's mm-hmm. this insinuation that the man is always going to be the breadwinner. But we know for a fact that especially today, that is certainly not the case. More and more women are more educated, the more in the workforce, they're advancing in the workforce or becoming entrepreneurs. And those are the parts of money and the dynamic or that intersection when we talk about what we want to accomplish with this podcast. It's really exploring life right there, yeah. Right in those different spots. It's like, how do those two things coexist? And I will also say selfishly, from a Black perspective, because we've looked at some of the data, I don't have any of those points off the top of my head, but I know for a fact that there are really big disparities between Black women and other nationalities and other ethnicities in the U.S. in terms of the proportion of Black women and Black mothers that are breadwinners in their household mm-hmm. and the dynamic that has or the impact on the dynamic that has within the household.
Yeah. I mean, even outside of Black women, it's been a trend against millennials. It's a generational trend that millennial women are earning more or more likely to become breadwinners in their house. And there's been like conflicting articles. Some articles say that millennial women are worried about it because it makes them less desirable and may emasculate the man in the relationship. And again, this data is based off of like heteronormative relationships. It's not excluding that this dynamic doesn't exist in homosexual or other types of relationships. But yeah, there's a lot of data that just conflicts about this changing dynamic in society.
Yeah, these are interesting times.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And again, I'm just glad that more and more of these conversations are being had. I wish it were more prevalent so that we could actually explore these. I will say, in my personal experience, over the last, I'm just going to use the last 10 years, when I think about the relationships that I have with guys and I would say their general comfort levels, I think whether it's by choice or, you know, not, there are fewer and fewer men holding on to this sort of traditional gender norm, this idea that they are and should be the breadwinners. Would you agree or disagree?
Yeah. I think today, if you have a woman in your life who has defied the odds and overcome the wage gap, you should definitely applaud her. But I understand why some men are kind of slow to come around. There's still a large narrative about being a provider of the house, and that provider is typically male. And I think there used to be like a social signal of class or status associated with, you know, having a spouse that doesn't have to work. It's like the equivalent of peacock feathers. If you can say that either by choice or necessity that your spouse doesn't have to work and you're able to still support the family. And that typically translates to something positive. So I understand why, you know, if you've been a beneficiary of that feeling, then you would be hesitant to kind of to let it go. It's interesting because income has like always been an area that I was competitive about everywhere except for my romantic relationships. So in my peer groups, in the local market, at the company, I definitely wanted to be in the top quartile of earners. But in my relationships, I was pretty indifferent. Like I, you know, maybe because I didn't have to think about it. Like we talked about this. We talked about this in episode one of Money on the Table in season one. But like I'd always dated wealthy is generous. well-off, high-earning men. And so when I met you, you were rich in spirit. Like, you weren't one of those people. I mean, you were... Anyway.
Wow. Rich in spirit.
You were rich in spirit.
We're gonna unpack that in a different episode, but go ahead.
My point was, like, I made more money than you for most of our working years together. Like, did you ever feel lesser than or that you needed to compete with me? You didn't make me feel any sort of way about being a breadwinner.
No. So when we met, I actually earned more than you.
That's true.
Right. And I would say I had significantly more in investments than you.
That's true. Right? Now, that's an important point because correct. Even though I earned more money in an annual year, you had way more money than
I did.
It. I spent every
dime. You spent more than you had.
Every dime.
And that was part of the reason. Yeah. Why I was not concerned about it, because I suspected that and I let it ride. And I was like, that's interesting. You know, she's very proud of what's coming in, but she's not paying attention to what's going out or how any right. of it is growing in the background. And so I think that was part of your growth process. And it's certainly an important part of our story. But no, I didn't pay attention to it because I was also, you know, as our relationship grew, and I would say just about over the halfway mark of our corporate careers when I started to look outside and say, you know what, I'm going to go where I see more growth potential for me long term. And that's when I stopped, for lack of a better word, investing in opportunities at work and started investing in building things outside of work. Mm. And had I took all of that energy, maybe I would have gotten a better result. But you know, we kind of made that decision. I'm going to start planting seeds for the future. You're going to put your head down and start really focusing on work. And both, I would say, worked, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we are now at a point as entrepreneurs where we're able to reap the benefit of many of the entrepreneurial decisions or seeds that we planted 4 to 5 years ago. Meanwhile, we're also benefiting from the fact that as you began to focus on work and doing better there, you had a series. Yeah, I remember you had a string of promotions over like a 3-4 year period, which was hugely beneficial for us. Because on top of that, we also gotten to the point where we were very comfortable with living on significantly less than we earned, right? So we could afford to take on risk. We could afford to invest in our future. And as a result, we are where we are.
I remember when we made the decision to live off of one income and invest the other one, and I felt like my income became more important. There was a pressure there. Mm-hmm. And that's probably similar to the pressure that male breadwinners may feel if they're the sole provider for their families. But to your point, at the end of the day, like, I was able to put that pressure in its place because of our investment portfolio.
Yeah.
Once we had enough invested, I felt like I had more of a choice and more autonomy and control over my career path. And like, when times were not great, I didn't feel a pressure to stay in an environment that I knew wouldn't contribute to my growth.
Yeah, it was an interesting time for me as well, because I remember watching you go through that. And I remember you would still get up and go to work. And, you know, I would see that and I was proud of you and you were proud of yourself. And there was a part of me that was motivated by giving you the comfort level to walk away from it. But I remember struggling with that because I knew that you were proud of the moment that you were in. Mm-hmm. So on one part, I wanted you to enjoy and to really soak it up. And I'm glad that you got that perspective and you were able to step outside of yourself and say, wow, this is probably the feeling that men go through, because you're absolutely right. There is a lot of pride in being able to know that because of the work that you do, you are enabling or allowing or able to just support your family and maybe an entrepreneurial endeavor and your savings, et cetera. But those are really interesting time period. But I'm really grateful for that observation. I want to go back to the study about Japanese versus Americans, because we know that this type or levels of competition don't just exist in romantic relationships. It also exists between parents and siblings, family and friends. And so I have a two-part question for you. One, have you experienced that? And two, have you been able to manage your own competitive spirit without putting our relationship on the line?
Yes, I've definitely experienced competition outside of, you know, our relationship with my brother or, you know, friends, colleagues who are doing incredible things with their lives. Mm-hmm. Like, I've definitely felt that tinge of competitiveness in the back of my mind. And I think the way that I manage my competitive spirit is really trying not to separate the process from the outcome when it comes to competition. So I remind myself that the whole point of competition is that it's supposed to be something that leads to better and faster results. That's true for business. And for me, I think that's true for personal relationships. So I don't really take glory in winning if I didn't enjoy the process itself.
Okay.
Like, have you ever been to one of those games or watched like a little league game or a junior basketball game where the other team just gets like pummeled? Like, it takes away from the victory a bit because the other team was just at such a clear advantage. It wasn't really a competition, even though there was technically a winner.
Yeah, I'm having flashbacks of being on the losing side of that.
Yeah.
When I was playing basketball growing up in New York, I remember there was this one team, and I played for the Junior Knicks, and this one team, they came in, and I was like, there's no way these guys are our age. They were all taller, bigger, faster.
Yeah.
It was like Space Jam or something. Like, it made absolutely no sense. Like, these guys just dominated us. But in a more realistic example would be the dynamic of the relationship that I have with our son, right? So he has none of your competitive spirit whatsoever. But when he does get riled up and he wants to, you know, be a big boy and we're competing, or he wants to show me how strong he is or something like that, you know, obviously I can very easily, you know, knock a ball out of his hand and crush his spirit. But there are other times where, you know, you let him win a little bit or you let him make some progress, but you don't want to do it too much because you don't want him to feel like everything is easy and things will always come easily to him. And oftentimes you can sort of tap into that own sense of competition and use it as an opportunity to actually empower him. So like when we're leaving the house or something like that, you know, I'll make sure that he closes the garage door, even though he's not really doing it. He's using his magic words to close the garage door, or all of those little things just kind of help give him a sense of strength and power and that sort of thing. But to your point, like, competition exists in a number of different ways, and it's not necessarily a bad thing, right? You can use it as a way to build character.
I think the challenging part about relationships is that, you know, in both of our examples, whether it's a sports team or you and a four-year-old, those are very clear advantages. But in relationships, they're not as clear. There are kind of these underlying power dynamics that are below the surface. And when it comes to money, this is super important because of how much stigma is baked into being a breadwinner or even choosing to stay at home. These are typically personal choices, but they have like these external social implications that can negatively affect your relationship. So in my experience, I kind of treat it like athletes treat game film. You know how they go back and watch game film and they kind of learn where their competitors are vulnerable and see all the areas where they can improve. That's what I gain from journaling and mindfulness. It's going back and looking at the people that I'm, quote unquote, in competition with, either in my head or in real life, and seeing like, does this make sense? Are we even, you know, at the same advantage level to be competing, or is this something that's in my head?
Sounds like it's just in your head.
Another reframe that I use to kind of control my competitive spirit, but still allow me to compete, is just reminding myself that some things are a team sport. It's not always me versus you or me versus someone else.
Exactly.
Sometimes it's us versus whatever we want to tackle. The team has a mission. Success is defined by the team goal. We both win or we both lose. And so that just kind of helps me kind of stay on track.
I'm going to play this clip every single time I see you like keeping score in your head, just to remind you that, you know, it's about us. It's about the team.
Well, you know what it reminds me of? That time we were doing an Instagram Live, and one of the tips that we gave, it was an Instagram Live about, you know, money and relationships. But one of the tips that we gave was to resist the urge to win every money argument.
Yeah.
And somebody DM'd us and was like, yeah, but how do you stop wanting to win? Do you remember what your response was?
I do. And you were like floored and you thought I was being offensive. But I was being honest, right? Because I felt like if you were asking us that question, two people that you've never met, and you are genuinely, you know, befuddled with how you resist this urge. I think I responded back with a question. It was like, why would you want to be in a relationship with someone that's comfortable losing all the time?
Ooh.
Right? Like, why would you want to be
with a loser?
With a loser
is what you said.
Is that what I said?
Yeah. Why would you want to be with a loser?
That is probably a little offensive. But my point was, think about that, right? Because I understand the urge, right? You always want to win. You want to be the dominating person that wins every single argument. Okay, if you think that's okay, let me ask you a question. Why would you want to be with a person that is comfortable losing every single argument, right? Mm. So you've got to give a little bit. And or to your point, recognize that, hey, like the team, the unit is not winning if you're dominating every yes. single conversation.
Yes. That's a perfect transition to final thoughts.
Final thoughts. Am I going first?
No. Have you not been listening? No, I'm just kidding.
I'm going to let you go first.
Thank you.
One of these days, I'm going to go first.
Yeah, you are. Next episode. I got you.
Okay.
My final thought is that I would argue the key to healthy competition is to make sure that you're actually playing the same game, like beyond just being on the same team. That sounds obvious, but I'm always surprised at how many people compete with others that are completely unaware that there's even a competition. So communication is key here, not in like the cliche surface level way. You really have to get into the cringy communication where you start to reveal your insecurities and the feeling you're chasing by trying to win.
That sounds incredibly uncomfortable.
Yes, it is. But that's where growth happens.
Cringeworthy.
Cringeworthy communication.
Ooh.
Yes.
That sounds like a book that no one wants to read. My final thoughts are a little different. And it's to say that competition, I think, especially in romantic relationships, is a natural occurrence. Like friction or conflict is a natural occurrence when you have two people coexisting within a space or within a relationship. It's something to be mindful of when you're managing your money together, because it can lead to things like overspending or a breakdown of trust. And I think one of the things or two things that can really help in keeping a check on competition, let's say getting out of control, like weeds in the garden or something, is first having regular financial checkups, right? How are we doing? Is there enough income coming in? Are we managing our spending? But in addition to managing and paying attention to the numbers, I think it's just as important to add a qualitative measure to that. So if you've got a spreadsheet that you have, maybe you just add another column and it's comments. And maybe we use that as like a journal entry, right? So in this month, we were really pushing, we were really grinding, we brought in all this income, we tracked all our spending, we kept it low. But how did it make you feel? And if one person felt like they had everything stripped away from them, or another person felt completely fine, then it'll help you recognize that there's an imbalance there. And if you do that, sort of track the journal and the emotional response to all of these things every single month, you might actually be able to not only see quantitative patterns in your income and in your spending, but you can also see an emotional pattern here. This person is always feeling horrible from January, Ooh. February, March, etc. And it'll help you right size what's going on. Sometimes it could be that sense of competition, or maybe it's like not necessary to have it.
Yeah, I love the idea of emotional pattern matching.
Yeah, it's like a shared journal entry in addition to the financial checkup or budget conversation.
Great. Well, thank you for listening to another episode of the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success. If you like what you heard, you already know it's 5 stars, and I want every one of them. So please leave us a rating and review, and we'll see you next week. You want to race upstairs?
No.
Bye, y'all.